You know, this time of the year, Dr. Ron House, President John A. Logan College, you know, you think, oh, well, you know, summer and less, less school going on. Of course, you've got classes. But, you know, I look at SIU and I assume the same thing with John A. Logan College. This is the calm before the storm. This is where you work on fall, isn't it?
It is where we work on a lot of things, including fall. And this summer has been extremely hectic, extremely busy.
The good kind of busy?
A good kind of busy, except it prevents me from taking any time off. But
right.
other than that, yeah, it's a good time of kind of busy. We do have an issue or two that are not really a lot of fun to work with, but nevertheless, that's the way that goes.
Do you have a number for fall enrollment, or do you have a goal for fall enrollment you can share with me?
I do not have a number. We will be registering students until roughly mid-August, not quite mid-August, 13th or 14th or something like that. I do not have a number. We're very happy to maintain the enrollment that we have. We've been around 4,000 for several semesters now, four or five semesters. And so we're happy if we can maintain that balance of roughly 4,000, which is a success story if we're able to do that. Most colleges in the state are still on a decline.
Right.
Colleges in southern Illinois seem to be doing a little better than the colleges in northern Illinois. But if we can retain 4,000 students around that, we will be very happy.
It's like every time I turn on the TV, I see another commercial for an online university.
Yes. Those are extremely competitive. They compete with not only community colleges, they compete with every university in the state. It's a problem. We do have a very robust online program ourselves, which the enrollment in that online program is increasing steadily and rapidly. We're happy about that. We sort of think that the online program has sort of supplanted the evening program that we used to have
right.
A long time ago. We still have an evening program, not very robust, but the online thing is really growing.
I'm not sure what I hear whenever I see online education ads. Am I hearing non-traditional students? Am I hearing time-starved? I'm not really sure who that person is sometimes. You think online university, well, that's for kids. No, not if you want to take classes at 11 o'clock at night. I'm not really sure. Who are those people? Because I see them sometimes. I just got out of school. I made a mistake. I took gender studies. I'm going back to do vocational. I mean, people change their minds, too.
It runs the gamut. Some of them are non-traditional students. Many of them are. But we also have regular 18, 19, 20-year-old kids taking online courses. They work part-time.
Yeah.
They do this. They do that. They're more available at 10 o'clock at night for an hour, or 11 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever their schedule is. And so we have a number of students across the board that take online courses. It is an alternative delivery system which attracts a lot of people.
And when they go online, that online education, it so often seems to be tied directly to their existing career. I want an MBA. And improvement, or somebody that's in a job and has seen a barrier thrown up because their education doesn't allow them to apply for something higher. I mean, those are the people in my personal experience. A lot of MBAs, people with business degrees, things
yes.
along that line.
Yes.
I mean, is that pretty consistent?
It is pretty consistent, but we have a number of people that are just working on traditional degrees. Many of our courses are online, especially general studies and courses of that nature. And so there is a good portion of a degree that can be earned online, and people take advantage of that.
So
it's the same quality of course online as you're going to get in the classroom, probably even the same instructor. So there is no loss in quality.
If you needed microbiology for a nursing degree, you could take that online and then get to your classes later. I'm pulling a name out when it comes to microbiology.
You're pulling out. You picked a lab course, which
oh, okay.
is more difficult, although some lab courses are now being taught over the computer.
Well, it was interesting, Ryan, because I was in Carterville, and I ran across a girl who I'd known as an SIU student, and she lives north of us. And what are you doing here? She says, I'm here for my exam for radiology. I've been taking my classes online, but there are some of the things that I have to do. She had driven down you know, a couple of hundred miles to, you know, because she had this exam that she had to be there for, you know, the hardware, I guess, that you get, I think, had donated to the college. And, you know, that everything else, but I've got to come down 4-6 times, whatever it is, you know, for the face-to-face stuff.
Yes.
But everything else online.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
You know, that I you talked about that you've been busy over the summer, and I'm just assuming, you know, some of the things that were less pleasant to deal with is the fact that you were notified on June 13th that the college had violated the Open Meetings Act.
Well, that is true. Now, let me clarify what you just said, Tom.
Okay.
We were notified that in the opinion of an attorney in the Attorney General's office, that we violated the Open Meetings Act. There are two kinds of decisions rendered by the Attorney General. Let's talk about that a minute. One is a binding decision, whereas that decision will say, here's what you must do. And then there's advisory positions, which says, here's what we think you ought to do. The opinion that we received is an advisory opinion. It does not demand us to do anything. It asks the Board of Trustees to release the tape of the closed session of March the 2nd, 2016. It does not demand it. It does not require it. It's simply advisory. So it's up to the Board of Trustees what they do. However, there's, like life, there's a complicating factor in that.
Right.
We are required by law to keep tapes of closed sessions for 18 months.
This was 3 years from the time that this happened until the decision was rendered, almost twice as long, if not twice.
Yes. We kept the tapes actually for about 24 months. And routinely, with executive session minutes, those go to the Board of Trustees for approval to destroy them. The Attorney General is required to give us a decision within 60 days, 2 months. So after 24 months had passed, we thought, our attorney thought, everybody thought, we don't do this without checking with our attorney.
Right.
This thing's over. I mean, they've missed the deadline so far. It's crazy. So the board voted to destroy those tapes. 39 months after that board meeting, the Attorney General renders this decision. And so now we're caught in this bind, or the Board of Trustees are caught in this bind. We're trying to figure out, we meaning the attorney, not me, it's a board issue, if those tapes are available somewhere else. And so there's a whole lot of things, there's a lot of moving parts to this. It's not quite as simple as it sounds. At some point in time, the board will vote on what they want to do with this, but they do not have to release those tapes, even if we have those tapes.
Okay, here's a couple quick questions for you.
Please.
Attorney General has a copy of the tapes?
The Attorney General has a copy of the tape because we submitted those at the time that we submitted the report.
In this meeting, March 2nd, 2016, that was a personnel meeting, staff meeting, right? About staffing?
It was about reducing staff by 55 people.
Whenever those closed-door meetings with the Board of Trustees, when it comes to personnel, I didn't know that those were ever released. And the court, the word the Attorney General used was a verbatim release. I thought staffing issues were supposed to stay behind closed doors and the meetings and the manuscripts from those as well.
There's two parts to that question. One is, you're absolutely right. What the Attorney General's opinion said, and there's no secret about this, was that a good portion of that meeting was not specific enough to warrant being talked about in open session, or in closed session, I'm sorry. And so the Attorney General's office said, you did talk about some specific personnel issues. You can take those out. You can redact those. But the part where it was just what you might call some type of general conversation, that's what we want released. The problem with that is, Tom, that actually was the second executive session that was held that night. There were a number of meetings prior to March the 2nd that involved board members and others. There was a list of 55 people that was presented to the board. And so in talking about laying off, actually riffing 35 faculty and laying off 20 additional staff members, there was specific information that was provided to the Board of Trustees for that. Now, they did not probably go down that list and talk about every one of those individuals.
Right.
But there's a little bit of confusion on the part of the Attorney General's office, and there was no inquiry as to what actually did happen, about what did take place. And so it is a little confusing. I don't even know.
Well, there are a lot of moving parts, and I think another one of those is a comment by a board member who talked about the criminal record of someone who was, I think, maybe a student member of the board or a student trustee or something along that line. And so there's a lot of parts here that are the moving parts, and I think it's hard to focus on exactly what happened, and more specifically, Dr. House, what happens next.
What is happening right now is our legal counsel is attempting to put together a report at the request of the board on exactly what the situation is and what is available, what are the board options.
Right.
Is it possible to retrieve those tapes from someplace? So all of that is scheduled at the moment to be presented to the board at the July meeting. All of this is a little bit cumbersome, takes a lot of time, and there's a whole lot of people involved. So I can't. It'll be on the agenda for July meeting. I can't tell you that report will be totally available. That's in the hands of the attorney.
But I can't help but think a whole host of these problems would have been solved had the response time been within the operating windows that they had that are built in.
Tom, that has been the problem with this whole thing. When you tell me you're going to do something in 60 days,
right,
and it takes you, that's 2 months, it takes you 39 months, there's a whole different set of variables that come into play, and people go on with their lives and institutions go on with their processes and their procedures and what they do, and then all of a sudden drop that on an institution and Board of Trustees is a little bit crazy. However, it is the way it is, and the board will deal with it, if not in July, probably August. But right now it's scheduled to be discussed and possibly take some kind of action in July.
A mutual friend of ours, at least he was a friend of mine, I'm hoping he was a friend of yours, his name was George Mace, Professor Mace. He was a mentor of mine.
Yes.
It's not easy for me to use that word.
Yes.
And I'd be at his house, and he'd point his diploma from SIU. And he says, you know what that is? He says, that's stock. He says, that's the stock that I bought whenever I paid my tuition and I graduated. And he says, when something goes wrong at SIU, the stock of my diploma goes up and stock goes down. Depends on how it's viewed and the credibility of the university. What's the stock situation from somebody at John A. Logan College when you have a problem like this? The credibility issues that come into play, the stock, the view. The time that's gone on, I think, is probably a good thing because it means business goes on. But credibility, I mean, when you are an educator, that is such a big part of who you are. And I was wondering, what are your thoughts on how something like this affects John A. Logan College?
Nobody likes this situation, the board, the staff, nobody. On the other hand, I would tell you that in my office, I have had no one come in. I have had no phone calls other than some board members. I have had no interest on the part of the faculty union that we deal with daily in terms of talking about this situation with me. I think there's the overriding factor, in my opinion, in this is instead of 2 months, it took 39 months. You know things are going to be different. And you also know, and if our attorney was here, he would argue till he was blue in the face that we did not violate the Open Meetings Act. Think about this. We were riffing, reduction in force, 35 faculty, 26 of which were tenured faculty, and 20 other non-faculty positions we were laying off, people we were laying off. Doesn't it sound a little silly that you can't talk about that in executive session? And so the board, the Attorney General's office says, I think I can quote really, we're asking the board to release those tapes. There is no demand. I don't know what the board will do. That's up to the board. But there's no directive there. There's no penalty there. And so I think people are a little smarter maybe than the teachable moment thing that you were talking about
right.
a while ago.
Yep.
And so at the moment, Tom, I don't see any repercussion. It's an awkward situation. Nobody likes it. It's not good for anybody. But on the other hand, it's not going to affect our enrollment. It's certainly not affecting the applications of people who want to work at Johnny Logan.
And the credibility
of the credibility of the institution.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of – is there anything on this subject that I haven't asked you about that I should have? That you want to say that, you know, that I just don't know about and I don't have a way to get there? Because so much is said and so much is speculated. I was wondering if you had a thought that maybe – when I just give you a blank sheet of paper, thoughts here?
Actually, I think I've said most of it.
Okay.
Common sense would tell you that if there's ever a time to go into executive session, it might be when you're laying off 55 people. Whatever the conversation was in that meeting, it might be a different issue. It might be. But nevertheless, there was nobody in that meeting but board members, an attorney, and myself.
Right.
And so all of those people except the attorney and myself were duly elected by the people. They were a board. They were functioning as a board. And sometimes board members say things, do things that they probably wouldn't do in a different situation.
Right, in the executive session.
Yeah.
To let your hair down, so to speak,
yeah.
So you can be frank and address the real issues.
It was a tough situation for everybody.
I know
the board of trustees wasn't any happier about this than I was or the staff was or anybody else was. And so emotions run high sometimes. And if there's ever a time for them to run high, it was that night. We had we had an open session, Tom, in O'Neill Auditorium. There were 350 people.
Many people there, yes.
About almost 60 people testified in open session, none of whom were happy. There was nobody in the room that was happy. And so it stands to reason that perhaps things might have been said in haste or in emotion that normally would not have been said.
Right. And that is human nature. A lot of people, and this is interesting because I keep this text line open in the studio and I get messaging while I'm on the air. And sometimes it's interesting what people choose to talk about. And I've noticed after you were here last time, in advance of your appearance today, people keep saying, what are we doing about vocational training and education in Southern Illinois? And it's just out of the blue. I can't help but wonder if some of it is not generated by the thought of Walker's Bluff. I can't help but maybe think some of that interest is the infrastructure at, you know, $45 billion for 6 years, and, of course, the budget you and I talked about in John A. Logan College. But it seems like people are starting to come around to the fact that this is something we haven't planned for, and who's going to keep the lights on?
It's a constant planning process. As the job market changes, we change our thoughts and ideas. And so it's an ongoing process at John A. Logan College that we assess not just the career and technical education programs, but also all of our programs to make sure that they're relevant, timely, fit, transfer, all of those things. In terms of vocational technical education, we have robust programs, thriving programs in construction management, heating and air conditioning, even high ranked in the top 20 programs in the country, electrical programs, all kinds of programs, not all kinds of programs, but many kinds of programs. And so we are constantly aware of that. Our students oftentimes don't finish the program because they have such a good job opportunity before they get a degree or a certificate. They say goodbye. I don't blame them. I might do the same thing. And so we're certainly aware of that. The people who are asking that question, it's a good question, but we're on top of that as much as any community college can be.
Do you think Walker's Bluff is going to create some real opportunities? I mean, here's one literally right now. Another text coming in says, yes, what about truck driving? Shawnee Community College has a waiting list. I know at John A. Logan College there are a lot of opportunities like this, and I wonder what kind of opportunities for education John A. Logan College will exist when the ground starts being broke for Walker's Bluff and all the things that go into it?
We do not have truck driving. We used to have truck driving. That program was abolished long before
long
I got there.
Ago.
I don't
yeah.
know. I think there were some reasons that we probably couldn't talk about on the air, but yeah. I don't know that for sure.
My first thing I think is insurance.
that too.
Yeah.
Walker's Bluff, we do believe that there may be some options there for us programmatically. First of all, we used to have a hospitality kind of program that was hotel management,
right.
Tourism, various things of that nature. Maybe now's the time for us to at least consider resurrecting that program or a version of it and apply it to the Walker's Bluff and other things that we have here.
Well, it was interesting because when you and I were chatting on the phone, I think it was yesterday, and you brought one up that just kind of culinary school.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We do not have a culinary arts program. We have a Rent Lake College has a great program. We have a number of students from our district that go to that program. With the development of that casino, that may give us an opportunity to develop our own culinary arts program, which would be a good thing. In addition to that, talking about career and technical, I think there's supposed to be about 1,000 construction jobs at Walker's Bluff for a while. There will certainly be a number of maintenance kinds of jobs, permanent jobs there, in connection with that. We believe that our programs can be a conduit to provide students, qualified students, qualified workers for those jobs. And so we're very much aware of that. We have a great relationship with Walker's Bluff and the people there. And Cindy Bunch is a graduate of John A. Logan College.
She is. Very proud of that fact.
And we all are. And so we are in contact with them. We'll be in more contact with them. Any opportunity that we have for program growth and student growth at the college, we'll certainly take advantage of that.
We went long, but I appreciate every minute. Yeah, I know we've been here for a while, haven't we? Dr. Ron House, John A. Logan College. Ron's going,
Thank you.
We been here for a long time? Absolutely. 23 minutes and 13 seconds.
Thank you, Tom.
It's always good to see you, Ron.
Good to see you, sir.
You know, whenever I'm out and about and I bring your name up, you know, because I'm always doing research in one form or another, you've got a lot of support around you. You've got a lot of people who are big fans of Ron House and how you've conducted your work at John A. Logan College. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty moved by some of the people. They say, yeah, we're still on, and tapes are rolling. And I have. I've gotten a lot of people that have said really good things about you.
Well,
I always get the sense, when I said that it makes you uncomfortable.
It does. I don't like to talk about me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too keen on other people talking about me.
Right.
I'm just an old country boy, Tom. If there's a job to do, I work hard at it. That's my reward.
You know, it's kind of interesting because you apparently have come to the point in life, which I reached at a certain point a few years back. The world changed for me the day I realized it's not about me.
Exactly. Exactly.
And
right.
When I did that, which was no small feat on my part, by the way, I started noticing, for one, I was happier. But two, it seemed like I let myself... I took a little pressure off myself and realizing it's not about me, it's about what you can do for other people.
Tom, there's 600 employees at John A. Logan College. Every one of them has had some role and some say in the success or the failure of the college. I might have some more influence because of where my office is, but it is not me. It's everybody. It's the Board of Trustees. It's those other 599 employees other than myself, all working together for a common cause. And I do believe we are pretty much working together for a common cause right now.
And then what's interesting about that, what I hear is I've got 600 people who care and who have taken ownership.
Yes.
The most crucial
absolutely.
Part.